What is the greatest spiritual gift as defined in the Bible? The greatest spiritual gift. In fact, it's titled or called the best gift that we should all earnestly desire. Anybody know what that is? The best, greatest spiritual gift that we should all earnestly desire. We'll answer that question. Revelation 5, verse 10, don't need to turn there, but says, "And have made us kings and priests to our God, and we shall reign on earth." What is the primary function of a king and or priest? Now, you might say, well, it's governance, but, you know, the primary role of our future, or our primary function of those future titles is spiritual teachers. If you think of, you know, government, I mean, a priest certainly is teaching. It's a teaching position. But even as a king, you know, we don't beat people over the head, you know, do this. You grab them by the short hairs and make them do what government would correctly have them do. Everything that we'll do in the future has something to do with teaching, which is really nothing more than communication. I know many people will say, well, I'm not a teacher. That's not my thing. That's not my gift. I'm just not a good person to be a teacher. Mr. Armstrong, before he died, had covered four mandates. That was his last primary focus. One of those four mandates was quite simple. It was prepare to teach. Matthew 5, verse 19 reads, "Moreover, or whoever therefore breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men so shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven." The teaching is a good thing, but it's not for just the pastor, the shepherd, Mr. Kubik, for elders, for teachers, or somebody that's in front of the group. It's for each of us, for all of us. If you would, please turn to 1 Corinthians 12. We will spend really the entire subject in 1 Corinthians 12, 13, and 14 today. If I were to ask, you know, what was the most quoted chapter in the Bible, I would think that 1 Corinthians 13 would make that list. It may be the most quoted, you know, the love chapter. It's one that's read often. Many verses are pulled from the love chapter. I'll jump ahead, but one of those, probably one of the most popular verses in the Bible, maybe behind John 3:16. But anyhow, verse 13 of 1 Corinthians 13 reads, "And now abide faith, hope, love, these three, but the greatest of these is love." That's a very popular verse, and we'll get to that today, but we're going to start in 1 Corinthians 12. Because the subject here that we find the love chapter wrapped in is not love, but is spiritual gifts. And that's important, and we'll see that. But anyway, let's begin 1 Corinthians 12, verse 1. Paul gives us the subject that he's about to cover. "Now concerning spiritual gifts, brethren, I do not want you to be ignorant, uninformed. I want you to have understanding about spiritual gifts." That's the subject. And since we're going to cover three chapters, we'll skip some verses. Verse 4, "There are diversities of gifts, but the same Spirit." It's a very important point. Paul's clear to say, look, our gifts are different from each of us. Have different gifts, different blessings, different things that we're good at. But it's important that it's the same Spirit. Verse 5, "There are differences of ministries or services, but the same Lord. And there are diversities of activities, but it is the same God who works all in all." Verse 7, "But the manifestation," which means the coming to light, how things are shown, "of the Spirit is given to each one for the profit of all." So again, Paul's making sure it's clear that there are going to be plenty of diversities of ministries or of services, of activities. And just the manifestation, how these gifts are made known, how they're visible, it's individual. But it should be for the profit of all, and that's important too. Let's skip to verse 8. As Paul goes on to explain not every gift, but different types of gifts. Verse 8, for to one is given the word of wisdom through the Spirit, to another the word of knowledge through the same Spirit. Again, he's talking about the unity of Spirit. Verse 9, to another faith by the same Spirit, to another gifts of healings by the same Spirit. Verse 10, to another the working of miracles, to another prophecy, to another discerning of spirits, to another different kinds of tongues, to another the interpretation of tongues. And that's really just languages, different foreign languages. And it may have been that God was blessing certain people with, I won't say instantaneous, but maybe, you know, the ability to speak multiple languages given the location, the geography, all the different people coming and going. Maybe. But anyhow, certainly the speaking of languages is a gift. We had the blessing of having the opportunity to go to France this year. And Simon, Cassidy's husband, speaks fluent French. And that's a gift. You know, I have trouble speaking English, let alone another language. He also is fluent in Arabic. And that's a gift. You know, Courtney, I know, is obviously fluent in Spanish. You know, I might be able to learn some of a foreign language, but I can be certain that I don't have the gift of tongues, of a foreign language. My mind just does not work that way. I'm always going to think in English until God changes that. You know, I don't have that gift. But many do. Some do. Verse 11, but one and the same Spirit works all these things, distributing to each one individually as he or it wills, as the Spirit wills. So again, it's the same Spirit, but there are diversities in gifts, diversities in ministries, wisdom, faith, healings, miracles, prophecy, discerning spirits, languages. These are all different gifts that God gives. The word prophecy, though, in this passage, I want to focus on this and make sure we define this word prophecy. I don't normally give all the Strong's numbers, but Strong's 4394 says this, the gift of communicating and enforcing revealed truth. The gift of communicating and enforcing revealed truth. Helps Word Studies on this same word. It says, prophecy which involves divinely empowered forth-telling, asserting the mind of God, or foretelling, which is prediction. So you get forth-telling, which is revealing the mind of God, what he thinks, how he would have us act or learn the things we should know, or very, very rarely, foretelling, predicting. You know, we think of prophecy, obviously, that word as being, well, it's prophecy of what's going to happen in the future. But again, prophecy is really most oftenly used as the gift of communicating revealed truth. There's a second Strong's word, which is just the very next number, 4395, which means to foretell, set forth matter of divine teaching by special faculty, and helps Word Studies again in this on this word, says, in the New Testament, prophecy occurs 28 times, usually of foretelling, which reveals the mind or message of God in a particular situation. So most often, and certainly in this context here, 1 Corinthians 12, the word prophecy means those things. You know, revealing the divine teaching, the mind of God in a certain situation. You know, we've got the Word of God, which is here. There's no mystery. The mind of God is contained, the things that he wants us to know at this time are here. So again, prophecy is understanding what's in here, which is the recorded, the written word, the mind of God, and how it applies in certain situations. That's important. That's prophecy. That's teaching. And we'll see that God defines that as the best spiritual gift, for which we should all earnestly desire. And we'll see that as we go through. I'm sure when I ask the question, what is the greatest spiritual gift? I know in my Bible, which is added by man, it says that love is the greatest spiritual gift. But you'll see that's actually not what the Bible says. We'll cover that as we go through this. And you'll see that will make sense. I know they'll be like, well, no, love is the greatest thing. It is, but it's never described as a spiritual gift. And it's important, because that's why we're going to cover this in context, 1 Corinthians 12, 13, and 14, because it's all one subject. It's all one subject. So again, prophecy is divine teaching revealing the mind or message of God in particular situations. That's important. Let's continue verse 12. Paul, of course, is trying to emphasize in these passages that it's one body. That's important because there are differences and diversities. There always has to be unity, always has to be done through and by one Spirit. Verse 12, "For as the body is one and has many members, but all the members of that one body being many are one body, so also is Christ." And he continues that one body theme, or, you know, covering that because it is so important, all the way down through verse 27, which just says, "Now you are the body of Christ and members individually." We're not going to focus on that part of it because, again, his subject is spiritual gifts, but he certainly makes clear that we can have all kinds of different gifts. But very, very important, the glue that holds that together is one Spirit, one body, and that's obviously important. Let's continue in verse 28. Again, Paul goes on, he's already covered in verses 8 through 11. He gave some of those differences or different gifts. You know, we read wisdom, faith, knowledge, healings, prophecy, discerning spirits. Those are all different gifts. Now Paul goes through in verse 28 and also says there are different positions and gifts. Verse 28, "And God has appointed these in the church, first apostles, second prophets, third teachers, after that miracles, then gifts of healings, helps, administrations, varieties of tongues or languages." Verse 29, "Are all apostles, are all prophets, are all teachers, are all workers of miracles?" Verse 30, "Do all have gifts of healings? Do all speak with languages? Do all interpret languages?" So he's reiterating all these different gifts, but he's saying, you know, there are different positions, different levels even of authority. But it's still all in one body, one Spirit, members of each other individually, but as one body. And it's important because he's covering the differences, but it's one body. Verse 31 of 1 Corinthians 12, what does he say? Verse 31, "But even though there are differences in varieties of gifts, and even though there are differences in varieties of positions, even that being said," he kind of concludes here, verse 31, "but earnestly desire the best gifts." Well, what does that mean? Earnestly desire, again, I like word studies, and I do like this word. I don't normally try to pronounce the Greek, but it's zelou. I don't speak Greek, so apparently that sounds differently maybe. Somebody else speaks Greek can say that. But it's an automatopoetic word imitating the sound of boiling water. Properly, it means to bubble over because so hot or boiling. Figuratively, to burn with zeal. So we're told to burn with zeal, boil over for the best gifts. Not just gifts, but the best gifts. And part of that, the importance of that is we can't use the excuse, "Well, I'm not blessed with that gift." And I understand that there is gifting that we're not going to override just by sheer willpower. But there is a part that we play. We earnestly desire, we should be boiling over, we should be zealous for these gifts, which inherently means that there's some part that we play in pursuing that gift. "Well, Dave, I don't have the gift of teaching, so therefore, and the subject, I'm done. Don't ever have to teach. I don't have the gift of knowledge, so therefore, it's not my blessing. It's God's issue. He didn't give it to me. I don't have to pursue it." No, earnestly desire, burn with zeal like boiling over, the best gifts. And it's a command, so very directly stated. Discerning of spirits. "Well, that's not a gift I have. I can't discern between good and evil. I can't really, nope, don't have that. Nope, don't really have the gift of faith. Nope, sorry. God didn't give it to me, so I don't have to worry about it." No, earnestly desire the best gifts. And there is a best gift, which is prophecy, teaching. And it's for everybody. It's for everybody. But here's a key. Again, we read verse 31, the first part. The second part of verse 31, after he's just told us, earnestly desire, pursue with zeal the best gifts, spiritual gifts, which he's already defined and given examples, and also the positions that may come with some of those. But he goes on to say in the second part of verse 31, and yet I show you a more excellent way. Paul is telling us better than pursuing spiritual gifts, there's something even better, but he does not describe it as a gift. He didn't say, and yet I show you the best gift, a better gift than everything else he's already covered. He says, I show you a more excellent way. The word way here means just that, a way, a road, a journey, or path. It's not a position, and it's not a specific spiritual gift. If it were, of course, what is that way? We know what it is. It's love. If that were a spiritual gift, he would use that word. He doesn't. He says love is a better way. It's more important than these spiritual gifts. And he goes on through the love chapter to explain why it's a better way. But he never says that love is a spiritual gift. If so, we could say, well, Paul, you've already said that some people have this gift. Some people have the gift of faith. Some people have the gift of healing. Some people have the gift of knowledge. Some people have the gift, a better gift of teaching. If love were one of those gifts, then each of us could say, well, I don't have the gift of love. It's God's fault. He didn't give it to me. But he never uses that word. He says, I show you a more excellent path, a better way than spiritual gifts. And it's so important, even in understanding the love chapter. Again, most Bibles say it's the greatest gift. It's unfortunate that it says that because God never says that. Love is commanded for every man, every person. You love God, love your neighbor. And that's not a spiritual gift. It's a command for each of us. You know, somebody may have a gift of languages. That's a distinct, specific gift that many others will never have. But love, of course, is commanded for all. So it's important. But again, because it's in context, again, so, and yet I show you a more excellent way. Well, what is that way? Well, continue in verse 1 of chapter 13. We often just flip to man-made books and chapters, but the subject here continues. And one important thing to point out, too, is in context of how we go through here in chapter 13 and 14, often the comparison is made to tongues or languages, which is simply just a non-issue for us anymore. We're not worried that, you know, somebody's up here speaking in multiple languages. It's just a non-issue currently for us, but it was in the context of when it was given. So again, a lot of what we read in here about tongues, about foreign languages, is just really not applicable to us. Again, the principles apply, of course, but it's not a big deal for us. But everything else about divine teaching, about revealing the mind of God, which is prophecy, still remains, obviously. So again, let's read 1 Corinthians 13, verse 1. He had just told us, desire the best gifts, but I show you a better way, and that way is, verse 1 of chapter 13, though I speak with the tongues, the languages of men and of angels, but have not love, I have become sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. Verse 2, and though I have the gift of prophecy. So he's going to pick this gift of prophecy for a specific reason. Because he later says it's the best gift. It is the best gift. The one that we should most desire. And though I have the gift of prophecy, of revealing the mind of God, revealing the messages of God, and how to apply them in certain situations, that's pretty important. What else could be more important than understanding the mind of God? In studying it, learning it, and sharing it with each other in a teaching setting, which doesn't have to be in front of a group. It's one-on-one. It's with your families. It's in conversations. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith, he's going back through some of these gifts, so that I could remove mountains but have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing. Verse 4, love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy, does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Verse 7, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. But it never says that love, again, is a spiritual gift. All those things that we read are requirements for each of us, not like a spiritual gift, where we could say, even though we're to pursue spiritual gifts, we're not going to all be speaking foreign languages easily as a gift, but love we should all pursue. Verse 8, of course, is the key passage or verse regarding love. Verse 8, love never fails. Love is eternally the same. That's an eternally true statement. Love never fails. The word fails really means ceases. Love never ceases. It was the same an infinite trillion years in the past. It'll be the same infinitely trillions of years into the future. It will never cease. It will never change. But every other spiritual gift goes away. Every other spiritual gift is temporary. Let's go back to the original list, Titan verse 8 of 1 Corinthians 12. Wisdom. Well, if you're a spirit being and you've been a spirit being for a billion years, I mean, isn't wisdom different? When you're a member of the God family as a spirit being, that's different. Do you have to have faith is another one. Do you have to have faith when you're a spirit being in the future, when there's no more flesh alive? Faith, the hope in things unseen? No, you're part of the God family then. It's different. It goes away. What about healings? If I said, well, we're going to pass out spiritual gifts today. Oh, I want healings. You know, I want healings. I want to be able to lay hands on people, and God, through me, through His Spirit, heals people. Wouldn't that be amazing? It would be incredible. But it'd be temporary. Best case, 40 in a few years, maybe. Maybe it's 5 more years. Maybe it's 20 more years. Again, it'd be a blessing. That would be neat. But it's temporary. Love, although, never ceases. It never ends. It's the same and will always be the same. But spiritual gifts are temporary. But even that being said, there's ones that we should pursue, and one in particular, which is teaching. And we'll see why Paul says so. So again, love never fails, but everything else does. Tongues. All right, so you speak one language. We met a gentleman in France who speaks 7. I mean, I could never do that. Well, all right, that's pretty nifty. That's pretty cool. But if there's a universal language in the future, do all languages go away? At some point, there's not even human beings, right? We're just communicating by thoughts. I don't know. But still, that gift of foreign languages, multiple languages, would be meaningless at some point. Discerning of spirits. Well, that'd be cool. I can tell somebody's a good spirit, bad spirit. I can tell if you're in a good mood today, bad mood today, just by looking at you. Well, that goes away too. At some point, we're all in God's family. So again, love, that's not true though. Love never changes. It never goes away. It's never obsolete. It never fails. It's eternally true and eternally the same. Spiritual gifts, however, continuing in verse 8, but whether there are prophecies, whether there's revealing the mind, divine teaching, the thoughts of God, even that goes away. Why? Because at some point, the Bible tells us, no longer will you teach your neighbor about God, because God will be on earth. You don't teach a fish about water. The fish understands what water is. Same thing on earth. So again, but whether there are prophecies, divine teaching, whether it be foretelling or forthtelling, they will fail or cease. They'll end. Whether there are tongues, so whether there are languages, they will cease. Whether there is knowledge, it will vanish away. You know, Paul goes on and explains, for we know in part and we prophesy or teach. When we teach, if I'm here doing the best I can to reveal the mind of God, divine teaching in a particular situation, it is still in part. Why? Because I'm not God, a spirit being. And we prophesy, again, divine teaching in part, but when that which is perfect has come, if Christ were here standing here himself teaching, again, I like to think and we pray that he is through me, through teachers, through pastors, through each other. But again, it's imperfect. It's only in part. But when that which is perfect has come, then that which is in part will be done away. That's why it's not like love, which is eternally the same and eternal lasting, eternally lasting. Spiritual gifts are temporary, but we should still burn with zeal and play a part in pursuing them. But love never fails. Verse 12, for we now see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know, again, knowledge, I know in part, but then I shall know just as I am also known. Verse 13, and now abide faith, hope, love, and these three, but the greatest of these is love. Again, the greatest eternally, the eternal thing that we pursue or want, desire, but are commanded to have is love. Is the earnestly desired gift of prophecy, of revealing the mind of God, the message of God, diminished or minimized in these passages? Because it's saying love is up here. All other spiritual gifts are less than that. Again, if you remember, the context of the subject that Paul's covering is spiritual gifts. Well, let's continue. Because again, verse 13 was the last verse of chapter 13, and now abide faith, hope, love, these three. But the greatest of these is love. We often end there. We just end there. It's chapter 13, verse 13. We're done with the subject because it says so, because chapter 14 must be different. Well, let's continue. 1 Corinthians 14, verse 1. Pursue love, just as Paul covered in chapter 13. And desire, boil, like you're boiling over, burn with zeal, spiritual gifts that were covered in chapter 13. But especially of all the spiritual gifts that were covered, that Paul covers, that God covers, that you may prophesy. Especially above healing. Well, no, Dave, I want to lay hands and heal somebody. I don't want to teach. No, I want to work miracles, the gift of miracles. I want to part the sea. I want to move a mountain with my faith. That would be so impressive. God's telling us, but especially, above all, more than the others, pursue teaching, revealing the mind of God, the message of God in a particular situation. That's amazing to me. If you ask me to rank them, I'm sorry, teaching's not going to be in the top five. I would much prefer healing, I think that'd be pretty cool. Miracles, that's going to be pretty cool. Faith, I want faith. But prophecy, teaching the mind of God, teaching those messages, is the best gift that we should all be pursuing. The word pursue here means aggressively chase like a hunter pursuing a catch. Again, we're to boil over and have zeal for spiritual gifts, but we're supposed to hunt like a hunter, love. Because it's eternal and never changes. So why do we pursue prophecy, divine teaching? Why should we pursue that? And Paul, when he goes through chapters 12, 13, 14, it's like he's writing a paper, a very specific, it's very structured, which I like. But he gives us the answers. Why pursue divine teaching? Verse 3, he answers again, because he's just told us, especially of all those spiritual gifts, that you may prophesy. Verse 3, but he who prophesies, again, divine teaching, speaks edification and exhortation and comfort to men. That's why it's such an important, the best gift. Verse 4, he who speaks in a tongue, again, he's using tongues because it was an issue of the day, but not today. He who speaks in a tongue edifies himself, but he who prophesies reveals the mind of God, the message of God in a particular situation, edifies the church. Edification, a building serving as a home is what that means, figuratively. Constructive criticism and instruction that builds a person up to be the suitable dwelling place of God, i.e. where the Lord is at home. So somebody that's teaching you, teaching each other, you teaching somebody else, provides edification. It provides an environment, you're building somebody up where God can be with that person, an abode. Exhortation or encouragement, depending on your translation. properly a call or urging done by someone close beside, i.e., a personal exhortation that delivers the evidence that stands up in God's court, i.e., holy urging. So again, when you're teaching somebody, again, it could be that on a Friday night, you pick a passage, you study it, you read it for an hour for your Bible study, for your time, you come into church the next day and you say, look, I read this verse, this is what it means to me. What are your thoughts on it? That's teaching. It doesn't have to be getting up in front of a group. I understand that that's not for everybody, but it's for more of us than we think, and it begins with teaching. Learning, taking the time to study, to prepare, to read, to pray, learn something, and teach it to somebody. Obviously, in the family, we'll talk about some of those things, but it's for all of us. The third thing that was mentioned as a benefit of prophesying is comfort. Means primarily a speaking closely to anyone, hence it denotes consolation or comfort. Teaching is helping people in those three ways. Edification, you're building them up, you're encouraging them, you're wholly urging them through teaching. Why? Because you're revealing the mind and character of God, the message of God in certain situations. It's how to live. But think about all the subjects that are taught. I mean, the plan of God, the mind of God, the future of mankind. All these things come through teaching. None of us have learned what we've learned on our own exclusively. It's by sharing different ideas. You could teach something better than I could teach it. Why? Because your experiences are different. I don't have your educational background. I don't have your family, your upbringing, the way you were raised, your employment history, the obstacles you faced, the trials you faced. They're different than me. So you understand a verse differently than I do. Perhaps better, probably in most cases better. Well, you can share that with others, and it results in edification, exhortation, and comfort. That's teaching, and it's for each of us. Verse 5 of 1 Corinthians 14, I wish you all spoke with tongues, languages. Why? Because that'd be pretty cool. You know, I wish you all spoke with languages, but even more that you all, in essence, prophesied, that you all learned, studied the mind of God, you understood what's in the Bible, because that is the mind of God, and taught each other, that you all prophesied, for he who prophesies is greater than he who speaks with tongues, unless indeed he interprets that the church may receive edification. Without encouragement, without exhortation, without comfort, what good is it? What good is it? You know, that's why teaching is the most important, the best gift. Again, we should pursue many gifts because we do play a part in that. But the best gift that each of us can do. I don't know if anybody in here is going to receive the gift of healing. I'm sorry, I just don't think it's going to happen. We can pray for healing. God does provide healings, but I don't know of anybody that lays on hands and person's healed. I don't know of anybody's shadow that heals somebody. You know, the gift of miracles. I'm sorry, I just don't know of anybody in here that's going to receive that gift at this time. God works differently in many respects. Are we going to get that gift? Are we going to be given that gift? I don't think so. But the gift of prophecy, of teaching, is something that we should all boil over with zeal because it's the best gift. And it's something that each of us can do. Verse 6. But now, brethren, if I come to you speaking with tongues, what shall I profit you unless I speak to you either by revelation, by knowledge, by prophesying, or by teaching? Those are all teaching words. You know, God's revealed word. Well, revelation comes through study, through prayer, through a relationship with God. By knowledge, same thing. By prophesying or by teaching. Verse 11, continuing in verse 11, therefore, if I do not know the meaning of the language, I shall be a foreigner to him who speaks, and he who speaks will be a foreigner to me. Even so you, since you are zealous, boiling over for spiritual gifts, let it be for the edification of the church that you seek to excel. Again, it's for the benefit of others. Continuing in verse 18, I thank my God I speak with languages, more tongues than all of you. So Paul had that gift of speaking in multiple languages. Verse 19, Yet in the church, I would rather speak 5 words with my understanding that I may teach others also than 10,000 words in a language. It might be impressive, but there's no good. If it's not exhortation, encouragement, or comfort, then there's no benefit. And why are those things important? Because they also are eternal. Paul had already covered that love is eternal. It hasn't changed for a trillion years before we're on the scene. It won't change for another infinite trillion years into the future. It's always going to be the same. But the things that teaching does, edification, exhortation, and comfort, can last an eternity. If you understand the mind of God, the message of God in situations on how to live, that's an eternally lasting thing. Healing would not be. You won't need that body. You'll just discard it in a moment and twinkling of an eye. But so that's why it's so important. Prophesying, teaching, lasts an eternity. Just like love never fails, never ceases. Again, it's a temporary gift because we won't need to teach us about God. We'll be in that God family. So the gift itself is temporary, but the benefits are eternal. That's why it's the best gift. Verse 22, skipping to verse 22. Therefore, tongues are for a sign, not to those who believe, but to unbelievers. But prophesying, again, that's the key subject here, as a spiritual gift, is not for unbelievers, but for those who believe. Verse 23. Therefore, if the whole church comes together in one place and all speak with languages, and there come in those who are uninformed or unbelievers, will they not say that you're out of your mind? If we had 5 new people walk in this congregation tomorrow and we all spoke in 25 different languages, you guys are crazy. I don't understand anything you're saying. It's crazy. Are you out of your mind? Verse 24. But if all, not just the pastor, not the elders, not the deacons, not the teachers, not the guy struggling up in front of the group. No, but if all prophesy, who study, learn through the Bible, through the written word, the mind of God, through prayer, through a relationship, study and reveal the mind of God, the message of God in certain situations, that's prophecy. But if all prophesy and an unbeliever or an uninformed person comes in, he is convinced by all, again, not some, not one, but by all, he is convicted by all. Verse 25 gives the result. Again, this whole passage is written so clearly as instruction to us. Verse 25, and thus the secrets of his heart are revealed, and so falling down on his face, he will worship God and report that God is truly among you. Wow, I thought the miracles would reveal that God is truly among that group. I thought that faith would. I thought that the gift of miracles or healings, no. Coming into a congregation and everybody's teaching each other what they know, what they understand, what they believe, what they feel, even opinions. Each other. It uses the word all, but if all prophesy, all appears 3 times in one verse. Each person, that's what will show a newcomer that God is truly among us. Verse 26, Paul gives a caution. How is it then, brethren, whenever you come together, that each of you has a psalm, has a teaching, has a tongue, has a revelation, has an interpretation? Let all things be done for edification. So everything we do, and now he's giving us a caution. Now, you're all going to teach each other. You're going to study, you're going to learn the mind of God, and you're going to share that. But be careful. We're not going to get into all kinds of differences of ideas, of coming up with new improved versions of the truth. He gives us here even a test here in a couple of verses. If anyone speaks in a tongue or language, let there be two or at the most 3, each in turn, and let one interpret. Again, without interpretation, don't bother. Verse 28, but if there is no interpreter, let him keep silent in church. Let him speak to himself and to God. If you want to get up here and speak a foreign language, stay at home. Talk to yourself. Talk to God. Because we don't understand it unless there's somebody to interpret. Again, it's just a non-issue for us today in application, but it was for them. Verse 29, let 2 or 3 prophets speak, and let the others judge or discern. You know, let two or three people speak and let others listen. Verse 30, but if anything is revealed to another who sits by, lots of people sitting by out here, let the person who got up here to teach be silent. Again, there's decently in an order. We're not, you know, you're not all going to rush me because you got some idea. I've been working out, so, you know, I'm ready for you, you know. But, you know, I mean, but the point is, you're going to learn something. You'll understand something differently than the rest of us. And there's a time to share that in a way that's proper, that's decently and in order. But if anything is revealed to another who sits by, let the first keep silent. Verse 31, for you can all prophesy. All. Not some, not one, not two, not three, not the ordained only. But you can all prophesy one by one that all may learn and all may be encouraged. There's a lot of alls in this passage. Why? Because it's the best gift that we should all earnestly desire, that we should pursue, we should be boiling over with zeal, all the spiritual gifts. I pray that you all give in the gift of healing and the faith of prophecy, of discerning spirits. That'd be great. But for sure, we should all be pursuing earnestly the gift of teaching. Verse 32, Paul gives us a test. And the spirits of the prophets are subject to the prophets. So everything that you may learn and want to share with others, rightly so, is subject to what God's word says, is subject to the prophets. For God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, as in all the churches of the saints. So again, the prophets, we've got the written word that God spoke through the prophets. What you learn and understand must jive with God's written word. If not, then it's not, you shouldn't be sharing it. It might be your opinion. But again, so that God gives us a test here to make sure that we don't do anything that's not decently and in order. Verse 34, Paul continues, he gives an exception. Let your women keep silent in the churches. Again, women can teach. Each of you can be teaching today 10 different people. Male, female, young, old, doesn't matter. But God doesn't want women in that sense, in a leadership role, formally in church administration in that sense, from, you know, pastors, etc. So again, Paul goes on and gives that exception. Verse 39, skip to verse 39, conclusion of Paul's message here. Therefore, so in light of everything Paul's covered, that God has covered, brethren, again, all, he didn't say pastors, he doesn't say elders, he doesn't say deacons, he doesn't say men over the age of 40. He says, brethren, desire earnestly, again, boil over like hot water, burn with zeal, to prophesy. And do not forbid to speak with tongues. So again, not saying that having languages is a bad thing, but he's saying don't forbid that. Verse 40, let all things be done decently and in order. And that ends the subject. But it's interesting, again, 1 Corinthians 13, love chapter, very popular chapter, very popular verses, and rightly so, are contained in the subject of spiritual gifts. But it itself is not a spiritual gift. It's greater than any spiritual gift. That being said, the greatest spiritual gift is to prophesy, to teach, to study, to learn, to communicate. As we read the definition, remember, of prophesy, communicating, enforcing revealed truth, divinely empowered forth-telling, not prediction, but forth-telling, asserting the mind of God, revealing the mind or message of God in a particular situation. That's something for each of us, not an ordained position. There are very few things we do as Christians, it's my opinion, that move the bar for us, you know, that take us from being what we feel like Passover, next Passover, the next Passover, the next Passover. I think of myself, you know, I'm here this year, I'm here next year, I'm here the year after, I'm here, here, I'm here, maybe I'm here, maybe I'm here. But teaching is one of those things that moves the bar, I think, substantially for us. When you have to study a subject and learn it and prepare it, get your thoughts together concisely, and then ask other people, here's what I understand, what do you think? Again, it's a sharing of information, it's communication. And that's ultimately what we're doing for eternity. As a priest, we're going to be communicating the mind, the message of God, for eternity. If we're a king, we're going to be doing the same thing. We're communicating how to live, organizing, building new cities in a proper way, whatever it may be. So again, we can teach, of course, at home, and we should be, with friends, church fellowship. I mentioned just sharing thoughts and ideas together before and after services. It doesn't have to be the Titans every week. It doesn't have to be your work experience for the week. It could be 5 minutes, 10 minutes. It could be a subject, again, that you study a particular verse and just share it with somebody. That's teaching. There are opportunities, of course. I mean, Spokesman's Club, sermonettes. You know, those are things you can talk to Mr. Petty. And at some point, why not? Why not? Employment, there are opportunities to teach. It doesn't always have to be, getting in front of a group at church. We have opportunities to teach and hone that skill every day of our life. Hebrews 5, verse 12. If you want to turn to Hebrews 5, verse 12. And I say that teaching raises the bar. It's one of those things that, if we do it, can result in leaps and bounds, I believe, in growth. And Paul, in Hebrews, basically alludes to that, if he doesn't come out right and say it. Hebrews 5, verse 12. For though by this time, see, Paul, you've been around a long time. You hear people say, I've been in God's church for 30 years. Well, it's the old adage, do you have 1 year of Christian experience 30 times over, or do you have 30 years of Christian experience? There's a difference. For though by this time you ought to be teachers. Oh, I thought he's talking to the pastor or to the elders. No, he's talking to everybody. God's talking to everybody. For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you need someone to teach you again the first principles of the oracles of God. And you have come to need milk and not solid food. Verse 13, for everyone who partakes only of milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. Verse 14, but solid food belongs to those who are full age, that is, those who by reason of use, teaching gives you that use, certainly living it does too, have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. Another spiritual gift. Teaching is good for you, and it edifies, encourages, and comforts the church, which has a lasting, eternal benefit. Let us all earnestly desire to reveal the message of God through divine teaching. Let us all earnestly desire prophecy.